Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Welcome to another episode of the Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors. A clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to the Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Oh, yes, look at that. As always, I leave a count of four so I don't have to edit it afterwards, even though I'll probably have to edit that out afterwards. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's my absolute pleasure to grab for the Good Listening To Clearing while she's still here in her current tenure. This is the artistic director, Jenny Stevens, of the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School. You are extremely welcome.
Well, thank you very much, Chris.
Lovely. I wanted to make sure you're definitely going to be here for many, many thousands of years, obviously. But you're just about to drop the mic as having had a 10-year tenureship as artistic director of the theatre school where I myself trained all those years ago.
I'm sure it wasn't very long at all that you were there. And yes, that's it. So we're now recording at the beginning of December and I leave just before Christmas after 10 and a half years. So it's been fantastic. But the thing is that having been there for 10 years, you can't do anything else. You can't work professionally. It's really, you just can't. It's all consuming. Yes. And I don't think that's really, I think then that becomes less helpful for students because they're going to be working with somebody that's been out the biz for 10 years. So I want to step back into to freelancing. I want to I'll be doing a bit of I'm going to be directing the Archers in January, and then to write. I want to get back to doing some writing.
And of course they grabbed you when you were absolutely a sort of consummate working professional. You've been the artistic director of the Worcester Swan, you are a theatre director, radio producer and writer, and you've been a director of the Archers before.
I worked for the BBC for a couple of years in radio drama. And actually, the bit that always makes it onto any biog is directing the Archers, because everybody knows the Archers. Actually, I did more probably afternoon plays and classic serials and that sort of work. But the Archers, of course, I love the Archers. And going back and directing now, it's going to be great because there are some people I haven't seen for 10 years that I will be seeing again. And when I last saw them, I had brown hair and it's now grey. And I'm sure it was the same with a lot of them. But you can't tell on radio, can you?
And by the way, having those lovely anchor points like the Archers, and in fact, my show, I reference Desert Island Discs because my show is set in a clearing as opposed to on a desert island and with stories rather than music.
Yes.
So we all need to know those BBC familiars so we can all have our relevant anchor points, I think.
No, absolutely, absolutely. And actually, I first started listening to it sort of about 32 years ago, because my son is now 31 and I was pregnant and he wasn't growing. So I used to have to, he was absolutely fine. He was just a bit small and thing and still is. But I had to go and have fetal heart monitoring and I used to drive to the hospital. And park outside and organise my visits every other day for the end of the Archers. And Shula was having a terrible time. And I remember just like weeping about her, her life and then going into the hospital. And they all thought there was something terrible had happened to me. But no, it was all high drama of the Archers, really.
And go you using the expression fetal heart monitor. I've not anyone heard that particular coin of phrase for a long time. Now, the exciting thing is, by the way, I got in touch with the theatre school because I want to help use the vehicle of the podcast to help amplify the reputation of the school, but also, you know, get to meet some lovely people like you two and various other fellow alumni. I think I get the Latin right. Alumni.
Yes, I think alumni is right for the plural, and they have alumnar if they're lady alumni.
I'm Christopher alumnus. See what I did there?
Yeah. Oh, very good. Very good.
So this is very exciting to get you at the point when you're about to drop the mic. So this is a bit like a sort of play it forwards, play it backwards, because I'd love to get your insights into, you know, how the theatre school is doing. And it's very exciting about what comes next for you too. And in fact, Second Curve is my other idea. It's even there on my logo in the backdrop. It's the idea we're all on a curve or a trajectory, but your curve wanes. What do you do to attach to your second curve that's going to pull you towards your future? So you're on the cusp of another second curve, I think.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I before I went to the theatre school, I'd spent probably after the BBC, I'd spent 6 or 7 years as a freelancer. And that was incredibly fruitful in terms of managing to write. It's impossible to write, even if you get a day, even if you get some hours, I can't do it.
Yes.
And that's just me. Some people can. Some people are absolutely happy to write if you get a short amount of time, but I've got to really immerse myself into a world. So
I'm very aware, by the way, that it's been a particularly complex time for theatre schools because of the fact just during the pandemic I was very sympathetic to actors who are in effect being catapulted into a blackout, it would seem.
Oh, it was a chuffing nightmare. It was really hard. It was really hard for our graduating students. It was really hard for people who just come out. You know, those 2018 graduating students and 2019, where they're just starting to put the foot on the ladder, because in a way, the 2020 students, it was really hard and everything was put on hold. But there was a bit of a sense that, oh, they're the COVID babes. We need to look after them. And then also, obviously, the students who were with us in training, that was just horrible, because it was painful, because the whole point of them for all courses is that people want to be, you know, it's a very collective, it's a very collaborative art form.
Yes.
And you want to be together. And it was just painful. I mean, there were some great things happening. There were, you know, we did text projects and we even did combat on Zoom.
but I'll punch you in the Zoom hole type thing.
All a bit like that. Oh, it was hard. It was really hard. And it was really a struggle for everybody, but it feels like we're really back now. But what's interesting is, because there have been things have been different for the past 2 to 3 years, what they've not necessarily seen, you know, what I've realized how much people see is, they see when you're in the first year, you see the progression to the second year, the progression to the third year.
Yes.
And you see that through the productions. And because they were really curtailed, because they were really something different, and they were all being brilliant, but they were doing something very different. So when we try to get back to our normal model, I think students are sort of thinking, they're not necessarily understanding the path they are on quite as clearly. And they've been really insightful in articulating. One of them said to me the other day that because they're understanding it now, but they were saying we didn't quite understand the people we would become. And so that it's been challenging, but they've been magnificent, really.
And it's the irony of the nature and joy of ensemble when it's curtailed, when you suddenly got to become a Muppet gallery on Zoom as opposed to being in the room with each other.
Yeah. No, it's really hard. There was one really good thing we did, which we do these sort of tours out into schools that when the actors are in the middle year and all the other students are working on this as well. But we do a sort of schools tour. And we decided one of the things we did was we did a Pied Piper on Zoom. So instead of it all being in their, in all the villagers' homes, they were in a block of flats. So that worked really well in the Zoom windows.
Very adaptive. I see what you did there. That's very exciting.
No, that was a wonderful director called Liz Felton working with us on that. It's great.
So if I may, let's get you going on the curated structure of the Good Listening To show. And please feel free to dip into the wonderful world of the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School at any one point. But this is also selfishly for you too, in the right way. You know, it's all about, you know, we need to be selfish. Human beings are 95% utterly self-obsessed. So this is your moment in the sunshine, Jenny Stevens.
Oh dear.
So, it's going to be a clearing a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise, as those that have been listening to the show before know. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then there's going to be some alchemy, some gold, a couple of random squirrels, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So, first of all, Jenny Stevens, where is a clearing for you? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational, and able to think?
It's a really good question. I had a big think about this, and there are two places I go. One of the places that I go quite a bit, and it sounds right posh, is Venice. We've got a friend who's got it's just fantastic. They've got a flat. It's actually sort of their business. It's got a flat on the Grand Canal. And we do go there, and I just love it, and there's no traffic, and I just it's such an evocative place, and it's really fab. So I sort of like, I'd immediately thought of that. But then I think in terms of being really uncluttered, I went back to my roots. Well, or near my roots, I should say. I'm originally from Bradford, marvelous place. But it is a bit rough around the edges. But going out of Bradford, going up into the Yorkshire Dales and up to the moors, when I've been back there, I just feel my shoulders drop, and I feel my heart rate slow. There is just something wonderful about that fairly empty landscape, this beautiful, beautiful undulating countryside, and a real sense of character. And you can almost sort of like still imagine the glaciers sliding through those dales to create them. And I find that a really wonderful place where you feel the landscape hugs you. I think that's a terrific place. So I'd go there.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
It's conjuring Ilkley Moor bar tat, and also I've got an image of somebody with a bicycle and a loaf of
It's the moors and the dales. And if you saw, a couple of years ago, they had, I think they must have been lost at the time, wasn't they? Because they did the French cycling
Tour de France, you mean?
The Tour de France, that's what it's called. I'm not big on sport. The Tour de France went through the Yorkshire Dales, and I think everybody's really blown away by how beautiful they are. And then the moors are slightly different again because of the bleakness, but a beautiful bleakness to those. But they're much flatter, and you just get an awful lot of sky out on the moors. And then there could be different colours in different seasons, as the purples of the heathers and then the browns. They're just a magical place, really.
And by the way, it's very intriguing. The Tour de France, clues in the title, going through the Yorkshire Dales.
Yeah.
Sounds like a sat-nav fail to me.
Completely lost, weren't they?
And I'd just like to say the word Peloton, please. Thank you very much.
Oh, okay.
Do you know what that is? That's when they all cycle round a corner in a peloton, when there's about 1,000 bikes about a centimetre apart all going vroom, vroom, round a corner.
Oh, right.
There you go.
So that isn't
giving you the tranquility you asked for, so I apologise for the word
peloton. Right. Like, I'll go there when the Tour de France isn't on.
So we've got a lovely Yorkshire Dales and Venice hybrid. And were you saying there's no traffic in Venice because of the waterways? So there's no.
Yeah, there are no cars. There are no roads. So there's only the traffic on the river.
And I was wondering whether you've got a logjam of gondolas or not, but that's all good.
You can get that. And we used to, you'd open the window of our flat, and they'd have people singing just one cornetto outside, obviously in Italian, outside the window. It's fantastic.
So I love the fact we've got a bit of a hybrid of a Venetian stroke Yorkshire Moorian. So that's
I can just go to either, I suppose.
Let's, you can choose where.
Okay. I'm going to choose Yorkshire to do the uncluttered thing.
Wonderful. So if I may, I'm going to arrive with a tree now in your Yorkshire dale, and I'm going to shake your tree to see which storytelling apples fall out. This is where you've had 5 minutes to have thought about four things that have shaped you, Jenny Stevens, three things that inspire you, two things that never fail to grab your attention, and that's where the random squirrels come in, and then a quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't know until you tell us. So over to you to shake the canopy as you see fit.
Right. Well, the four things. Oh, I got myself terribly confused with all of this as well. The four things. I think sort of like going through in order the things in terms of shaping me. I suppose it's childhood, isn't it? I think it's going to be that for most people. It was. I'm from a sort of like quite a rough end of Bradford, and you know my family are still up there. My parents died a few years ago, but my brothers are still and nieces and nephews and everything are still all around Yorkshire. Actually, one of my brothers moved up to Scarborough. But that was, I mean, clearly incredibly formative of me. That's, you know, and I've got to say, as a child in Bradford up Great Horton Road, sort of like living behind the co-op, and my school, my senior school, St. Joseph's, it was girls' school. It was right in the middle of a red light district. And I, you know, literally used to sort of like time the prostitutes during the maths class. I failed my maths so level. But, I can do a right good time and motion study. I've done that line before, you can tell.
That's a very good line.
I remember really having this sense of, There's a party happening somewhere in this country. You know, there's things happening. There's theatre happening. There's culture happening. Nobody's given me a roadmap. I've absolutely no idea how to enter that sphere. And so then that takes me to my second influence, which is university. I went to Birmingham University, and that was absolutely transformative for me in all sorts of ways. I met people like. Many people have done things like been to boarding school, and not just in an Enid Blyton book. But just a whole, you know, just lots of different people that I'd sort of never met before, obviously, as always happens. But also, just educationally, I think I hadn't been fantastic at school. I hadn't enjoyed it. I feel, you know, you're sitting in class getting bored out your skull. So A, this is much more active, but B, you also understand how much it's the connection between things. So it's no, you don't learn, you know, history one lesson and then you go and do, I don't know, maths the next lesson. It's actually the connectedness of things that I think is much more intellectually interesting. And I really thrived at university. It really turned me on in a way that school had been fine, but it just hadn't. Really, you know, it hadn't really engaged me.
And I love the idea of the interconnectedness of things. That sort of allies to the through line of a narrative and storytelling.
It does. And I can bang on forever about it's really the connections. I remember, you know, I'll probably do this. I might do this later because I think there's a point where I do a thing at school at the moment. We have a thing called context and style. There used to be sort of like History Fridays, but I've changed it to context and style because it's about understanding style absolutely comes out of historical moment. It comes, and we are all a product of it. So when you do melodrama, for instance, sorry, I've gone going completely off piece, but anyway, it just interests me. When you do melodrama, and we all know it's all sort of like large and it's all got very stock characters, but it comes out of a historical moment that's about the Industrial Revolution. So everybody moves to the cities. So you've got all these people who are looking for moral certainty. You've got people who have got some money for entertainment and they want big entertainment, but also the historical moment that is technology, because you're starting to get limelight. And with limelight, it's very big, it's very bright, it lights it up so you can have these big, you can have pretty big theatres. But again, it's a very harsh sort of light. So again, the big shapes, the big gestured theatre going on. So and the simplicity of the tales, the sense of spectacle that people want, because people are illiterate and so they're looking for stories in a dramatic form. Anyway, I feel like I'm
no, and also
I'm giving my lecture now.
No, but, that was but what it, I.
It's
sorry,
just that is the connectedness.
But that was the genesis of Step Into the Limelight. I just heard reading between the lines of what you just said, and that's why. And then this idea of big shadows and big epic gesture.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And moral certainty and all of those things. And we're always, you know, so now, and the reason I do all of this is because now student, everybody, we're always a sort of like product of our time. So what does that mean? What are the stories we need to tell now? What's the urgency? What are the things that are stopping us? Finance is nearly always behind everything. You know, this just sort of like financial situations in general. You don't get, for instance, with Shakespeare, you know, if you watch a Samuel Beckett play, you know it's written in the 20th century, because you don't get two-handers, you know, in Elizabethan times, do you? And that's about the financial imperative and how things stack up. So just all of those things. Just so university was the place that just filled my soul, and it was all, it was very I did drama. It was very practice based, and it was transformative. It really was.
And did you go to university to be an actress in studying drama, or how was it working for you?
Absolutely not. No. I have acted. It's a terrible thing. I used the Yucca form at the time, and I put on it. I wanted to be a theatre director. I had no idea really what it meant, but I did become one. So I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the acting bit, but it was absolutely not about acting. It was much more broadly based than that. It was about wanting to work in theatre and drama. And I at the time, I said I wanted to be a director, aged 18. And that's what I did, yeah.
And there's a currency of something called the inner genius, where sometimes our inner genius knows before we do what's required. So the fact you found yourself writing that is very intriguing.
Yeah, yes. I mean, I really don't quite know where it came from. I don't think I quite understood what one did, really. I mean, I'd done drama, O-level as it was at the time, and been part of a Bradford Playhouse amateur youth theatre and things. But that was the limit of my experience before I went.
I mean, you're in good company. Liam Gallagher, apparently at the Dole office, said, "I want to be a rock star," and then walked out and was. So there is a way of doing that. So we're still in the shapeage, I think. Maybe there's one or two shapeages still to come.
Oh, yeah. No, so that's right. So I talked about, it was my, I've got it written down. So it was really my birth family, if you like. It was university. I think it's my, also my family, my husband, my long-suffering Philip, who I've been married to for 32, 33 years, who is, you know, my best mate, and our kids, our two, who are now grown up. And that's a terrible thing about children. They grow up and they move away. We're all still close, and I'm looking forward to getting them for Christmas. It sounds like they're up for Christmas. Wrap them up, get them for Christmas. I mean, they're coming to visit for Christmas. My son works as a lighting designer. They've gone into the family business, which is a bit annoying, really. Will is a lighting and video designer, and he works. And he trained at Bristol Old Vic Theatre School. In fact, he turned up at the same time I did, which is all a bit embarrassing, but we've got different surnames. He's Will Monks. And I never know where he is and what he's doing. He's always busy. He's based in Leicester just at this moment, because his girlfriend is assistant director at The Curve in Leicester. And then our daughter Helen is an actor and writer. So she is in Upstart Crow at the moment in the West End. Ah. And with Stuart.
Yes, who was a guest.
Because I just listened to something to try to work out how this works.
I've seen Upstart Crow. Which one is your daughter?
She plays Susanna.
Gosh, that's the main comic wonderful foil.
She's Susanna Shakespeare. She's David Mitchell's daughter. Yes. Well, I say Shakespeare's daughter. She did the telly as well. She was Susanna Shakespeare on.
Wonderful. And very good she is too. It's a joyful ensemble of glee. I think it's lovely.
Oh, it's fun, isn't it? It is fun. Yes. So they're in the family business. And Philip, my husband, is a writer, but he works mainly in education. He does lots of work. So, and we just, I've got to say that I love my family. We just have a great time together. And just all those sorts of you know, all of that.
And by the way, I love the fact you said my long-suffering Phil. You're like the Queen. I think the Queen felt the same way.
Yeah, probably did.
Okay, yeah, now sorry.
Oh, hang on. And then I forgot. Oh, and the other thing, because there were four things you said, so that's three. And then the last thing that I think, but maybe this is inspiration instead. No, I'm going to save them for inspiration.
In which case, let us segue, madam, into the three things that inspire you.
Right. Well, the three things that I've got that are inspiring me are, and I'm just looking over here for my notes. I'm quite big on, I do an exercise with students. It's about role models. So I do it with sort of like with the directors, and I've done it with we've got writing students as well. And it's about trying to find a moral center, trying to find out, you know, what are the things that matter to you? And it's really difficult to sort of like say, well, who am I? What am I interested in? Because it's very abstract, isn't it? So what I do is I get people to talk about normally two heroes, and they don't have to be absolutely perfect people. They can be, you know, you could pick people who have got terrible things about them as well, but what there's something that's heroic, something that you really admire. So the people I do that with are Frederick Douglass, who is an amazing person, and you'll be able to, you can listen on Spotify to his autobiography being read. He is an American. He's African, but he was transported to America. He's an escaped slave. No, he wasn't. He was born. That's right. There's a bit of controversy. I think he was born in America, but he escaped as a slave, and he's an absolute phenomenal orator. And he tells the story of his autobiography of his childhood, and of he never saw his mother in daylight because she was about 9 miles away. And so what she'd do is she would, and was only able to do this occasionally, she would set off at nightfall and she would run all the way to him, and she'd spend the night with him as a tiny child, as a 4-year-old, 3-year-old. And then she would run back before dawn to Wow. spend time with him. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And then he got, he went, I think it was to Baltimore. He went and he became a sort of houseboy for somebody. And the woman of the house started to teach him to read. And the husband of the house went absolutely bonkers and said, "You do not know what you're unleashing." And how right he was, because he had only learned a little bit, but then he used to go down and see ships being built. And he used to see people carving letters into the wood so that you'd know how it would all fit together. And so then he would say to children on the street, look, I know how to read. And they'd say, no, you don't. You don't. And then in the dust, he would draw letters and say, look, see. And they'd say, oh, yeah, you've drawn the letter S or whatever it is. And yeah. Then he would almost cheat his way into learning to read and write. And then he's become this amazing, and then life went on and he escaped and all, and there's a phenomenal, I mean, his life is absolutely phenomenal.
And are we talking sort of 18th century Frederick Douglass?
We're talking 1830s was when he was, yes. when he escaped.
Yes.
But he's an absolutely remarkable man. And I think that the power of literacy is amazing, is amazing in that story. I'd have definitely him. I mean, I've got other people. I've got Joan Littlewood to be one, and then Aaron Bevin. But then actually, in terms of inspiration, I think that my colleagues and the students at the school, I would absolutely have them as being incredibly inspirational. And I think the thing that never gets said about drama schools, tell me if I'm talking too much, by the way.
No, this is lovely.
I think the thing that's never really acknowledged about drama schools, because you get a lot like the stage, you're always going, oh, it's full of posh people and all the rest of it. And that is just not true. What it is probably the only, and I'm not just talking about Bristol, I'm talking about RADA, I'm talking about Guildhall, I'm talking about Royal Scottish, I'm talking about Royal Welsh. There are the really high-end drama schools. What's phenomenal about them is that they all have small cohorts of students. and across courses as well. And they have within them, they have a real social mix. So you have got, we've definitely got in the same small cohort of like 14 students, you've got people who are brought up in care and people who went to Winchester School or, you've got this real social mix. And if you think of, and it is a gold standard, it's identified by Ofsted, the Office for Students, as being gold standard education. Mm-hmm. And to get that at this sort of level, you know, if you look at universities like Oxford and Cambridge, sure, there's some sort of sense of social mix, but there ain't anything like you've got in our place where some people have had really fractured educations. Or you go to somewhere that's fantastic for access. So I don't know, Walsall University, Wolverhampton University, definitely, where it's really terrific and it's really great for access and people locally can get to it. But to get something that is such a gold standard of education with that sort of social dynamic is unique, and nobody celebrates it in the way that it really, really should be celebrated.
So there's an integral diversity within what is there currently.
Absolutely. And everybody learns from each other and learns about each other. And, you know, of course, there's all like rubbing against each other. And of course, there's knobbly corners. And of course, then there's issues about, well, what we're doing when we're casting and all the rest of it. But actually, at heart, I think that they are phenomenal powerhouses of creativity, and they power a lot of the drama industry. And I mean that for the theatres and the social change of theatres and the West End and the film industry and the streaming industry. I mean, they are an absolutely what powers them. Mm. And they are all drama schools are threatened at the moment because of finances, and they just really should be cherished because they are such a motor behind these huge industries and huge wealth creation for the country, not just like individual people, but for the country.
There's a real feather in the bristle of it, theatre schools cap. I know that currently the sort of upper echelons of the Crown are all alumni of the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School.
Oh yeah. So Olivia Colman is, well, we're moving on to the next series where we've got Prince Edward is ours. And I know I know casting as well for the next series. I know who's in that. I don't know if that's out yet or not. But also, like, you know, there was Erin Doherty as Princess Anne and Josh O'Connor as Prince Charles and Queen Olivia and actually Tom Byrne as Prince Andrew as well. And it's quite good. We didn't have a Prince Edward then, but we've got one coming up now. But you know, again, like Erin, Erin's this sort of like Essex girl she's absolutely not posh, you know, she is acting.
And you've had a Hamlet at the Bristol Old Vic as well very recently in the form of Billy Howell as well. Lovely.
He's terrific. And he's all over.
And by the way, in the diversity thing, when we first started speaking, you said a really lovely expression about how you are credited with being able to spot talent. And I think the expression about you, or you might have said it yourself, is about finding diamonds in the dust, you said.
Oh, I have said that about, I don't know if that is, we as a school absolutely do that. That's about we really look hard to make sure that wherever people come from and that we are looking for heart. We are, and it is just finding those people with that potential to tell stories and really embody and inhabit character in a sort of sophisticated way that we look for. And they come from all walks of life.
And it is such a lovely
imagination.
And it is a lovely expression of within the dust, there are diamonds in the rough, sort of.
Yeah, but that's everywhere. That's within, you know, very, very, you know, posh schools and building sites and that dust is everywhere as well. It is.
Yes. Wonderful. Where we could be at the point now, unless there's any other inspirings, we could be up to...
No, I think I've done my inspirations. I think I'm all right there.
Okay, let's get on to the squirrels now. What squirrels, you know, what two things never fail to grab your attention, Denny Stevens?
Oh, now that's really difficult, isn't it? Do you know what? I think I genuinely am a tiny bit ADHD. So what happens is I get my attention grabbed all the time in all sorts of different directions. I think the things that I think that the things that grab my attention are really sophisticated performances. And by that, I sort of mean, I think it's quite easy for people to come to us, and when they're auditioning, you know, there's a lot of weeping going on or whatever. And that's about emotional access. There's an ease of emotional access there, and that's absolutely fine. But it's the emotional sophistication, yes, that lies behind that. So if you look at Billy and his performance as Hamlet, I mean, I thought it was astonishing in terms of the levels of thought. I mean, you don't necessarily see all the workings with him, but there is a very sophisticated thought process. And, you know, it's not, my rule of thumb on it is that a sort of bad soap opera tends to be people say what they think what they say, and then it's all very straightforward. Actually, what happens with sophisticated acting is there's just people have got the history rooted into them, and they just embody, they seamlessly and organically sort of embody quite a sort of like complex emotional processes that are just richer and more sophisticated, and you can glean where things come from. So if you look at something like Succession, on that, I mean, that's an amazing, amazingly acted drama, and with some astonishing scenes. So I think it's just really, really fantastic work. And you know, often things, and this is for students other than acting as well, is the sort of when things take you where you didn't expect to go. So it's that, yes, thing about working with designers, and you think, oh, you know, this is what I need, and then they will transport you. Same with all those with costume students, with production art students, with sound designers, where people take you beyond where you imagined. That's what, as part of the creative team, that is really.
By the way, that made me think about the sort of yawning subtext beneath a really well-produced Chekhov play as well, where it's all about the subtext and the depth and the, yeah, truth that lies beneath the surface. Still waters running deep, truth and authenticity in emotional.
Yeah, it's real sincerity there, yeah.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
By the way, in the Hamlet production at the Old Vic, I was transported exactly the way you describe with some of the set design, because I saw some strip lighting that made me think I was at the optometrist, you know, because it
right,
straight at these strips that were almost blinding. But of course, it was quite clever because you're looking at the harsh vision of someone's life falling apart. So I don't know whether the designer intended that. I'd be intrigued to talk to him about it, but I got something else that was not overt, if you like.
Well, yeah, and that's quite often what happens with art. You can read it in sort of multifarious ways, can't you? No, that sounds brilliant. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I thought it's a terrific piece of work. Yeah.
And so now the second monster of distraction, or squirrel. So you've talked about truth and depth in emotional acting.
I've got to say, Chris, I talked about sincerity. I tend to shy away from the word truth.
Okay. Tell me. Yes.
Well, it's just I always find it confuses me. And I think it can sometimes confuse our actors as well. So I do tend to talk about sincerity, and because, you know, if you stopped and thought about it, of course it's not true. Actually, you don't. You do enter into that. You do absolutely enter into,
by the way, that's a love
physiological space.
That was a lovely correction as to what your opinion is. I love that. So it's not truth for you, it's sincerity.
Yeah. And that is just, it's just the sort of language that, it's just the sort of thing that makes sense to me, I think is the point. And what else grabs my attention? Oh, do you know what? I do, you know, loads of things do. Watching, I just get distracted very. What else grabs my attention? I think I've already done one for that. Will you let me off with that one?
Yeah, of course, absolutely. I mean, I've just heard that you said you're borderline. You were joking, I'm sure, but ADHD. So everything's
always.
Well,
no, I genuinely think I am. I think that's why I probably didn't do very well in school, because I was itching to be up and doing things.
But I loved your time and motion study in the measuring of the prostitute's use of time. That was good. Very good. So now we're up to a quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know until you tell us to end the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Right. Well, I tell you what it is. It is just how much I enjoy Tomb Raider.
Tomb Raider as a
game? Yeah, playing Tomb Raider. It's a computer game. Yeah. I just love I've got to say, this always startles students, so that's why I use this. Oh, my God, I love to. Have you not played Lara Croft and all the rest of it?
I know who you mean, but I've not played
the
game.
You're wasting your life. Get Tomb Raider. Honestly, it's fantastic. I love computer games like that. I'm not very good, but I don't play sort of like shooting games, and I don't play anything competitively. But I just, you just go for these adventures. The other thing is, I've actually had to give it back because we were using it from Bath University lent us VR headsets, which are amazing. So I love that sort of thing. And with a VR headset, you switch it on and you are immersed in a world that is 360 degrees all the way around you. And so, you know, you're on the, I don't know, NASA space station, and you're trying to do things, and you're moving through it, and you can walk around it. Tomb Raider isn't quite that sophisticated. It is a computer game where you have to wrestle tigers and move blocks and jump around. But I love all of that stuff.
I mean, it's a lovely segue.
You'd never have known that.
Lovely segue into virtual reality, because theatre is about creating a virtual reality, and yet you're very cutting edge because you've actually worn a virtual reality headset.
Yeah, we did some experiments actually during, it was sort of as really as we're coming out of lockdown, where we, because it was so hard on Zoom, we just wondered, is there a way that we can put our students in VR headsets so that they are immersed in a world? And so, you know, when we practice fighting with those on, so you could have somebody in one room. I mean, you could literally have somebody on a different continent, but the problem is that you're what you see. So if I was fighting, if I had my headset on and you had your headset on, we could be in you could be somewhere completely different, you know, as you are, and we could be in the same room. We could have our headsets on and feel like we're in the same room. The difficulty at the moment is that we look that you get a little mini me character that just looks like a sort of Lego character really walking around. So you'd be a Lego character for me, and I'd be a Lego character for you, rather than actually all the.
And in terms of in Star Trekkie land, that would be the Halo deck or the Holodeck or something, where they go and do the virtual reality stuff. And Patrick Stewart, that he's a Bristol Old Vic alumni as well, isn't he?
Well, all the best people are.
And yes, so. That's shaking your tree. Huzzah. Now we're going to stay in the clearing, move away from the tree, and let's talk about alchemy and gold now. When you're at purpose and in flow, Jenny Stevens, artistic director, soon to be leaving at the Old Vic Theatre School, what are you absolutely happiest doing?
I am probably happy. This is going back a bit, though, to one of my... I think two things. Well, am I meant to do two things?
No, alchemy and gold are not two things. It's the same construct of when you're at purpose and in flow.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay. Well, I'm really, really happy when I've got my kids here, my grown-up kids here, and we're playing. I'm just looking over there. We've got them. Things like, there's a game called Ticket to Ride, which is fantastic, where we're playing board games. Oh, we're all sitting together and watching Midsummer Murders, and I make them watch it. Or just like, absolutely. My Chinese horoscope is a pig, and I cannot tell you how pig I am. I am just a pig in muck in terms of absolutely just loving rolling about in the muck with my family. That's my go-to place. And the other place is a rehearsal room. So those are my, where am I doing two? That would be.
And I love the fact you torture your children with television. So torturing them with Midsummer Murders and all good. But like,
oh my God, I love it.
In the trufflescape of family. I love that. And a rehearsal room. Lovely hybrid there. And then now I'm going to award you with a cake, and you get to put a cherry on the cake. And this is stuff like, what's a favourite inspirational quote that's always given you succour? What help or advice might you proffer to a younger version of Jenny Stevens? And we're ramping up to Shakespearean legacy as the final component part.
Right. So is it, so are there three different things, Chris? I got terribly confused because I'm.
Yeah. So what's a favourite inspirational or theatre quote that's always given you sucker?
Right. Well, I've got sort of three. I've got one that's about education, that is, which is my man, Frederick Douglass, who said, and I just love this thing, it's easier to build strong children than it is to repair broken men. And I just think, I mean, and for men, let's read Humankind, obviously. And I think that's just wonderful regarding education. I've got another one. Sorry, I'm doing too many of these things now. I've got another one, which is one I picked up from a student, which I use all the time, which is very simply, strangers are only friends you've not met yet, which is just that thing about all the time. You know, whenever I'm out at a party or when I'm with students, it's always looking for the quieter voices. It's always making sure that people are sort of like happily included. But also, you know, actually genuinely on the whole, people are fantastic if you go to people with open hearts and try to get the best out of them. But there's also a quote that with theatre, my favourite sort of theatre quote is Joan Littlewood, who was marvellous, marvellous inspirational director, used to set up and ran Stratford East Theatre. Yeah. And she was found one day on the doorstep, scrubbing the doorstep, and everybody went up to her. Philip Headley was her assistant. People went up and said, Joan, what are you doing? And she just said, I'm expecting company, aren't you? And I just thought that was wonderful as well. That's the thing about theatre being a you know, a place that to make people welcome.
I love that. I'm expecting company, aren't you? Did you say?
Yes. Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah. Isn't that fantastic? I use that all the time.
And the Frederick Douglass quote you said there was lovely. Just say that again. It's easier building stronger children than.
It's easier to build build strong children than to repair broken men.
Lovely. Are you ready for a bit of Shakespeare now, or would you like to give some help or advice to a younger version of yourself?
I think the advice to the younger version of myself was when I was thinking back to in the earlier things about, I mean, genuinely feeling like there were things happening, you know, feeling like there's a party happening in the country and nobody's giving you a map. I think would be to tell myself, don't worry, the internet's coming along and you'll be able to find everything because you can look so much up now. I mean, it is unbelievable, isn't it? How our lives changed. And so I think telling my younger self, my God, you are in for one hell of a life in terms of the things that, you know, we used to go to the end of the street with chums for the phone box. And like now you keep the world of information in your pocket. I would just love to say to my young self, you don't know nothing yet about what's going to happen.
That's so lovely. And of course, now we could just Google where's the party at, and you'd have Googled
it. Absolutely can. Absolutely. How does the industry, who, how do you get a job acting? And you can find out about, the Casting Directors Guild, the Performance Management Association. I didn't even know that was a thing. You know, you can find so much out. Yeah, that's what I tell myself.
Lovely. And now, inspired by Shakespeare and legacy, when all the world's a stage, how, when all is said and done, Jenny Stevens, might you most like to be remembered?
Yes. Do you know, this is the one I couldn't answer, and I actually reached for another quote, because honestly, I am Mrs. Really Bonkersly Sociable. I recognise I'm a complete extrovert. But actually, bizarrely, I'm not right bothered about being the centre of attention. So I can't be bothered with this. I think don't bother really. And then the nearest I got is there's a wonderful thing with Keats. I don't know if you know, Keats is buried in Rome. I haven't actually been to his grave, and I can't quite remember which cemetery it's in. But his grave, he's just got, here lies one whose name was writ on water. And it's the idea, he didn't even have his name on there. And then what happened is his mate got buried next to him with a thing like saying, lying next to me is, and it's a bit like, you know, it's Keats, and it was really good. And it's a bit like one of those T-shirts where people have got, you know, I'm stupid or something on his gravestone. But I think, honestly, I'm not bothered. I won't be there, will I?
Oh, so that's don't bother. Lovely. I'm not bothered. That's lovely. But you are wonderfully passionate and bothered. I've really got that. That's fantastic. So, Jenny Stevens, as this has been your moment in the sunshine, is there anything else you'd like to say whilst we've got you here?
No, I think that's it. I think that just everybody, my big plea to everybody is to cherish, is to cherish drama schools and the training that is there, and the real, and I mean this in the widest sense, the diversity of people coming in who've have had, you know, fractured educations, some of whom have had, you know, very terribly, you know, expensive educations. And the, I mean, although personally, I would come the long run, I would absolutely, if I was Queen of the World, I'd ban private education. But for those students themselves, they're lovely. But I think the main things I'd say is really I'd ask people to, over the next few years, as austerity bites and people think it's you know, not as important as some things, you've got to remember what a motor it is behind so much creativity in the country. And, you know, drama is incredibly important as ways of understanding ourselves and looking at ourselves, telling ourselves stories in ways that make sense. And actually, as an industry that brings a phenomenal amount of money into the country,
yes,
it's such a great investment. And I ask people to put their arms around that over the coming decades.
And of course, it's not just the sort of front of the house lights.
Absolutely,
it's all of the
technical
department and all of the other infrastructure that goes to support the whole, prop up the world of entertainment.
Absolutely is. It's the camera operators, it's the editors, it's the writers, it's the costumiers. It's everybody, and they are really, really special places that are expensive to run. But my God, they're a fantastic investment for the country.
And as you're uniquely positioned, about to drop the mic after 10 years as being artistic director at the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School, what would you like to say to the theatre school?
Thanks. Thanks for the ride. I've loved it. Each and every one of you. And I love the sense that people come back, people keep in contact, people come back and visit. Oh, by the way, Ruth Sidery says hello, Chris, because she's back at the theatre school.
No,
like, nobody goes away, do they? They're all back. We've just been working with a ukulele teacher, and I saw him the other day at one of the shows. I said, how are you? How's things? He says, oh my God, says, the school is just so marvelous. He says, it's just like such a special place. Mm. He says, you could warm your hands on it. And I just thought that was, and, you know, the students were, there was one of the directing students the other day was saying, the thing is, you often read all the marketing about places where they say, oh, it's like a family. He said, It blooming is, isn't it? It really is. It's, you know, they all work together so well, and they are, they're really special, and they're really, you know, bullshit free, and they're great.
I so love coming full circle. You saying thanks for the ride, and you could warm your heart, your hands on it, and you're leaving with a warm heart, and that's really clear.
Absolutely am. And they won't be entirely rid of me. I'm already booked to go back and do a few things in the new year.
Of course you are. So, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the joy that has been and is and continues to be Jenny Stevens from the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School. I've been Chris Grimes, but most importantly, that's been Jenny Stevens. Thank you very much indeed, and good night.
You've been listening to the Good Listening To show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from The Clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@ThatChrisGrimes.
So until next time, for me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan,
to your good health.
Goodbye.